As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, Scott Burnside back for another edition of Two Man Advantage, the podcast, part of the Athletic Hockey Show Network. Pierre LeBrun, we are past the trade deadline. We're past Patrick Marleau's incredible establishing of a new all-time games played record. It's almost playoff stretch time now, right? Are you feeling that? Are you feeling we've moved on? We're in a new phase of the season?
Yeah, and it's weird that the playoff races aren't nearly as compelling as normal.
Yes.
Very strange, and I think at the end of the day, it's got to do with all the head-to-head matchups. I think that affect, you know, all the four-point games. In a normal year with everyone playing everyone, it really feels like everyone is so gelled up and there's so much parity. But it's weird. You kind of know where this is kind of headed playoff-wise right now, for the most part.
Yeah, no, and we're going to, speaking of playoff races and teams that we thought might have been in one but aren't, we're going to hear from Columbus GM Jarmo Kekäläinen. Always a treat to chat with Jarmo. Difficult times in Columbus, but we're going to chat with Jarmo in a very short period of time. But you mentioned the playoff races and, you know, the sort of the drama may be a little bit muted. I watch again, second night in a row since Vancouver comes back after just an incredible time with the COVID-19 variant and all of the drama that surrounded that team, the health issues. And now they've come back and all they've done is beat the best team in the North Division and one of the best teams in the NHL twice in a row in
that.
Toronto Maple Leafs. And so there's two sides to this because, you know, how long ago, you know, we were talking about Jack Campbell and James Mertl's tremendous feature on Jack Campbell. And oh my gosh, what a great story. Now it's like, oh.
Yeah, it's Mertl's fault. It's Mertl's fault.
It's James Mertl.
There's no question. Jack Campbell's come back down to earth, which I don't think is shocking. I do think he's a better goalie than he's shown of late. So somewhere between of late and the 10-0 peak is a very, very good backup. But this all comes down to what the year started as. Freddie Anderson come playoff time. I mean, that's the...
Oh, my goodness.
That's the... that was the story before the puck drop in mid-January. And it will come back to be the story if and when... all signs point to him returning here. And that'll be the story again as he's a pending UFA. And it really, you know, comes down to him and goal. Which is some pretty rich theater, no question. But listen,
I just want to interject here. I got something that, you know, something sort of niggling that says, wait a minute, what if the story is not Jack Campbell and not Freddie Anderson, but big save, Dave Rittich.
Oh, wow.
A very under
there were,
the
there
radar.
Were a lot of big saves last night in Vancouver from big save Dave. I can tell you that. I mean, two of those goals were horrendous. Yeah, horrendous.
Okay, so.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, Tanner Pearson should be calling the league and asking to give one of those goals back. But
I know. That was not pretty. Anyway, so yeah, that's. It is fast. And of course, you know, again, it creates, as you point out, it creates the consistent narrative around this Leaf team as we approach the playoffs and as we think about
it. Yeah, and they're so well built. Like this should be the Leafs' year to finally win a playoff round and beyond. They really are. They're so deep. I love the construct. I love the pieces that Kyle Dubas has added. I love the Foligno deal, as you know. It's all there, but could be. Good goaltending sink them. Oh, my goodness. And, you know, I was thinking ahead, if it is Toronto, Montreal, though, the Habs are just not looking good at all right now. But pretty hard for them not to make it. Wouldn't it, you know, that's just Toronto, Montreal, and the way both teams are playing, the Leafs should really handle that series. But could you just see where it's like Carey Price says, okay, let's go, second win. Oh, my goodness. There's so much that could play out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Carey Price out now with the concussion protocol. Yeah, and, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, and yeah, exactly. And I know the numbers don't add up, but man, what it would be great to see. Just it would be such a great story. If
it would be an even better story if the Vancouver Canucks somehow made the playoffs. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean,
wow.
The schedule tells you that it's just too hard. In fact, that's part of what Montreal is facing. I know people don't like talking about it because it sounds like an excuse, but the Habs look gassed to me. When they got blanked by Ottawa the other day, I was working that game for TSN. It was their 11th game in 19 days. That's not what the NHL should be, right? And now Vancouver's going to live that. And they're not only going to live a similar schedule to the Habs, but they're going to live it actually having had an outbreak on their team, which Montreal got lucky and didn't have. They only had the one player, Yoel Armia. So, but it would be sad. I mean, if the Canucks actually make this a race, you're going to have a lot of bandwagon Canucks fans, I think, throughout the league. What a compelling story.
We're going to touch on a couple things before we take a break and then come back to Jarmo Kekalainen. But I go to the other compelling race or compelling storyline vis-a-vis team breakouts and, you know, the impact and can you overcome that to make the playoffs? And that's the Dallas Stars. And what a great... It's just such a great story. And I got
to
tell you.
And it's not surprising. I refuse to ever write them off this year because he kept looking at the games they could make up. And
They were so, and they, you know, they had such a strange, you know, they couldn't get, you know, they were always going to overtime and losing in shootout. And I was like, no. And then Nashville, of course, on their tear, I just thought Nashville had created enough separation. But as you and I speak today, Dallas 1 point back with two games in hand. And what a great race. And it's amazing when you look at that Dallas team, plus 17 goal differential. Jamie Benn is playing lights out again. They moved him to center. They're going to get Tyler Seguin back. What about the kid, Jason Robertson, Nick's brother. Jason Robertson, 35 points.
Making the Calder look like the Calder was a slam dunk, but now I would say an interesting discussion, right?
Yeah, no, I for sure. And his and I don't have it in front of me, but his production at 5-on-5 has been absolutely outstanding. And, you know, again, when we think about that Stars team that went to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final against Tampa, it was their depth, right? I mean, guys stepping up every single night to contribute. And Jason Robertson has been, you know, it's such a fascinating team, right? It's just...
By the way, what I really... sorry to interrupt because you're going on forever, but... How good would it be to get Florida Tampa Bay in the first round?
All right.
I mean, that's what I want in that division. That's you could call it a rivalry all you want, but you need to juice it up for real come playoff time, right? And they actually have fans in those buildings. I mean, that would be a fun first round series.
So I watched. You know, it's sort of like, you know, I'm in the South, so, but I watched that Carolina-Tampa game, so back-to-back nights. Mm-hmm. Interesting, John Cooper goes back to Vasilevskiy, back-to-back, didn't really work out as the Canes lose in overtime in the first game and then come back and win 4-1 last night to take over. Well, they're still tied with Florida points-wise, but points percentage in first place.
Carolina looks so good right now. And, you know, for people wondering why the Hurricanes didn't do a whole lot at the deadline, I mean, they made the one they flurry deal, but because they didn't need to. I mean, you know, trade deadline's overrated. And you do things if you have specific needs, but if your team has all the mojo, you also don't want to mess with it. And I think the Hurricanes handled that pretty good at the deadline.
Well, here, and I'll say this, Cedric Paquette coming in early in the process from Ottawa, Stanley Cup winner, key. And I disagree with you. So you didn't say they didn't do anything, but I got to tell you, let me ask you this. Is there a place for Yanni Hakanpaa to be this year's Michael Kempney? Remember when Michael Kempney went to Washington?
I thought that was one of our questions for Ask the Dorks.
Way to go.
Way to go.
All right. Okay, we'll talk about that later then. This is it. You would read the questions from the dorks and I have it. All right. That's why we work well together. All right. Last thing before we take a break and chat with Jarmo Kekäläinen. Interesting move. Roberto Luongo named GM of the Canadian effort at the World Championships coming up later this spring/summer. Normally, the World Championships in a pre-Olympic year, they're kind of a big deal, right? Because it's a chance for especially deeper nations like Canada and the United States. Chris Drury is going to be the GM of Team USA at the World Championships. It's an opportunity traditionally to give an opportunity to younger players who might be on the edge of the Olympic bubble, an opportunity to play internationally, show their commitment, play their way into consideration. I'm not sure we're going to see that. And I think that's a tough thing, but who knows? What do you make of the Luongo thing and the World Championships?
Yeah, I mean, that is the carrot. And you're really going to need that carrot this year because it sounds like they're setting up sort of a half bubble or some version of a bubble is what they're talking about in Latvia, you know, again, through this pandemic to hold the tournament. So I don't know that the players will be able to bring family, for example. I don't know that. I'm just guessing. So it's going to be a tough sell. On the other hand, you know, Darren Dreger mentioned this on Insider Trading last night on TSN, that he's told that the response has been pretty good so far from some pretty good young Canadian players, that you might see a Thomas Chabot or a Carter Hart, etc. So that's, you know, that bodes well for Canada. And again, I think that's the clear carrot, right, of trying to get on the radar for Doug Armstrong and Beijing. So can't speak for Team USA, but certainly on the Team Canada side of things, it looks like they'll get a few decent players, and that'll be interesting.
Yeah, might be worth that. Yeah, I'm curious about it. I got to tell you, the guy I'm curious about, a guy like Carter Hart. Does he get an invite? Does he decide to go?
Yeah,
I'm
not, you know, I just mentioned him. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I just I wanted to see if you were paying attention to me. Do you think he goes? I think this could be critical to him.
Yeah, I think he'll go, yeah.
We'll see. All right, it's time to go to a break. Some days you just don't have it, right? I mean, so...
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
As promised, joined now by Columbus Blue Jackets GM Jarmo Kekäläinen. Jarmo, thank you for coming to hang out with us. I did some research this morning, and math is not my strong suit, certainly in the early morning. But I think you started with the Ottawa Senators in 1995, which would make roughly 26 years, not continuous. You were back in Finland doing management stuff at one point, but that's a long time to be in the machinery of NHL management. And I wonder, when you look back at this season, if there's any way to prepare for, you know, what happened this year with you guys in Columbus and in the NHL, any way to prepare for all of the challenges of this season as we head down the stretch?
Well, we tried to do everything we could to prepare for a season. You know, there's been a lot of curveballs starting from the pandemic and the environment or circumstances that we have to deal with and everything around the protocol. That's by no means an excuse. Everybody's dealing with the same stuff, and you gotta just keep getting through it. But I've been part of some builds that took a long time before the team got good. Never as a GM in the NHL, obviously it's a little bit different. But yeah, it's never fun going through a stretch like we're going through right now. But as we said at the deadline, we felt that it was necessary at this time to do a little bit of a reload. And we didn't think it was going to be easy down the stretch. That's for sure. Everybody's battling for their divisional spot, not only for the playoffs in the last couple of spots there or the last spot in our division, I should say, but also the seeding and they're all hungry for the points, and we're just battling for our lives right now to stay in every game and do the best we can. But I always say it's a great learning experience when you go through adversity. It's not fun. It's not something you often want to learn from, but I think that times like this reveal character both in players and in management and staff, and you just got to take those lessons and move forward and be better for it.
Well, Yarmo, I'll preface this comment by knowing that GMs really don't enjoy selling at the trade deadline. They much prefer being on the other side. In fact, probably more fun a couple of years ago loading up and upsetting the 62 and Lightning in the first round. But I will say that if I had to crown a champion of the deadline this year, I think we would give you the title, given what you got back for a couple of pending UFAs. And I know they're good players, and Nick Foligno means a lot to the franchise. David Savard's a top 4D, but I will tell you, and I said it on this podcast, so I have to sort of single myself out for being wrong. I did not think you could get a first round pick for either of those players. And I was absolutely blown away that you were able to orchestrate that. I was wondering if you could walk us through both deals as far as building that market up for each player.
I think it just says how much teams value character. And those two players have great character. They're great teammates. They're both leaders in their own way, and that's where the value comes from. It's not always just the things that you see on the ice and the points and the statistics and the underlying numbers that everybody's talking about. It's the intangibles, and you can count on those two guys to come to the battle every single night, every single shift. And that's why our team has been successful in the past few years. We made the playoffs 4 years in a row because we had our core full of guys like that show up every night, every day for work, even on the non-game days, and set the standard for everybody else. I think that's the easy explanation in my books for the value that we got for them. And it wasn't just one team or two teams. It was several teams for both of those guys. And I truly believe that it's because of the character they both have.
I think a day before the Savard deal, I think the Savard deal went down on Saturday. By the way, it's such a blur for me. And a day before, I had a source from a team say, you know, you're almost telling people he already has a first on the table. And I was trying to figure out if you were doing the poker thing or if you really had it. But clearly, you already had that on the table from Tampa, I guess.
Yeah, I don't bluff in those situations, because then if you bluff and all of a sudden you don't have it and you have to call that team back and they say, well, you already told us you had a first round on the table, then you look a little foolish. I'm not much of a card player anyway, so. I don't bluff. If I make that statement, then that is on the table. And obviously, something can change if they go with another player, and all of a sudden, the offer that was on the table is gone. But no, I don't bluff. And in this case, I tried to keep everybody interested, informed that here's the ongoing price. If you want to stay in the race, that this is what you're going to have to pay. Like I said, there was competition for those players. So for our future and future parts and picks that we could get for him. There was a great situation because we had a few teams competing against each other, and we were happy with the return and sad with the departure of the players. But like I said, it needed to be done at this time, and you know, we weren't right from the start of the year. It didn't look like we were a team that was going to compete for the Stanley Cup this year, and that's always the ultimate goal, I think. You know, making the playoffs is great, and at least get an opportunity to compete for the Stanley Cup. I also say that the worst thing to do in this league is to finish 1 point out of the playoffs and draft 14th or 15th. And, you know, we were so inconsistent down the stretch. We were in the hunt. We were in the race for a long time, even with the inconsistent play. But once we dropped out of it, and it became pretty evident that we weren't going to make the playoffs, this needed to be done. And now we have some assets that we can either use for picks or you know, trades. As I've said many times, it's going to be an interesting summer with the expansion draft coming up, and teams being cap squeezed and with salaries going up through the arbitration process, there's probably going to be some players available that you never thought would be, because teams have to fit under the salary cap. So I think it's good to have those assets. I think we can speed up our process here a little bit, and that's why we're calling it a reload. We have some young players that are maturing here fairly quickly, and it needed to be done. But now having gone through this rough patch after the deadline, it hasn't been fun, but we didn't really expect it to be easy, to be honest with you. We thought we're going to go through some struggles here down the stretch with the players that departed being such a big part of our team for such a long time.
Jarmo, I'm curious about, you know, how you pivot now as a GM to, you know, where your focus is between, you know, now and the end of the regular season. And of course, then, you know, looking ahead to the draft in July, you've got three first round picks, but you've also got young players that I'm assuming that when you watch your roster on a nightly basis, that this is sort of like an extended tryout period for the young players that are currently within the Blue Jackets organization. And I wonder, you know, how important this next period of time is for you when you look ahead to the draft, but also trying to assess what you already have in house.
Yeah, it's very important. We evaluate every night. And as I said, the adversity and reveals character, and we want a full effort, 100% effort every night, and compete through this. And we're not going to give up, and we're not going to, lie down here and surrender for the rest of the year. We're going to try to compete as hard as we can, and that's a big part of the evaluation, is that we want that type of character that we've had all these years, that we had some success, and we want that type of players on our roster, and it's definitely an opportunity for these younger players to show that they could belong in this level and take a bigger role on the team moving forward. We got some games left here, and every game and every shift's an opportunity to show us.
Yeah, and you've got cap space entering the offseason, Jarmo, now. You know, as I think you once told me, there's cap space, but then you got to peel back the onion and look at where that cap space might go. And obviously, in your case, you know, perhaps a huge offseason as far as Seth Jones being a year away from UFA, right? I think Zach Werenski's in the same boat. So how do you think you approach all those things as far as building, you know, continuing to build around those two, you know, very special players?
Yeah, we have that cap space for next year, and then it will probably go pretty fast after that with the players that we need to sign. So you have to be pretty careful with the term of players that you sign this summer. So knowing that it'll affect the cap space the years after when we really do need it again. So it's a delicate process, but it's a problem that we've looked at very closely, and I think it's very doable, and the players that you mentioned, they are the the new leadership of our group and the core of our group. Seth Jones is one of those players that for me, through every tough game that we've had after the deadline, has shown tremendous leadership on the ice, off the ice. He's battling like hell every game to show the type of character that we want here. And that's great to see. And when a guy like that sets an example, that's the best type of leadership. He's been tremendous. So, it's going to be interesting, but I think that, we'll have some great opportunities, ahead of us too.
Do you have a plan for both Seth and Zach in terms of a timing, in terms of how you would like things to unfold? Can you characterize sort of how, if you've had initial talks or if you've got a plan that you'd like to see unfold as you think about heading into next fall and hopefully a return to normalcy around the world, but certainly within the NHL walls, how you hope it might unfold?
Yeah, I'd like to see both of those guys in Blue Jackets uniform for long term and for a long time, and hopefully for the rest of their careers. They're the heart and soul of our team. I've said this many times. I think they're among the best D pairings in the league. They log up 25 to 28 minutes every night, play all special team situations, power play, penalty killing. All the crucial situations of the game, whether you're protecting the lead or whether you're one goal behind, those guys are always on the ice. They're against the team's best forwards. They can defend. They can create offense. They're big guys that can battle and have shown through the toughest of the playoff series that they can rise on to another level. So. You definitely want to keep that type of players for long term. I think they both have great character too and leadership, as I mentioned about Seth Jones. But I think Zach Werenski is that too. And both are not real vocal, loud guys, but both are determined to win and driven to win, and guys that their hands don't shake when the big games are on the line. And those are the type of guys you need.
Yes, we certainly saw that in the play-in series win over Toronto last summer. Now, Yarmo, I think, I've known you long enough, I'm not going to beat around the bush. I think part of the reason those two contract situations are paramount for your franchise, and you can agree or disagree, but it's been a tough couple of years here for players that have left. And, Pierre-Luc Dubois, first of all, I still remember, Scott, I think you were at the draft too, being in the rink at that draft where you took Dubois over Jesse Puljujärvi, and I could hear the hush in the crowd. I've never heard that in 25 plus years of going to NHL drafts. I could hear the hush in the crowd. And then I remember after the draft walking past the interview area and all the Finnish journalists were grilling you. After that pick, I'll never forget that either. But you seem to be handling it just fine. Anyway, long way of saying you had invested a lot in Pierre-Luc Dubois, and the it's a body blow when a player like that asks for a trade. It's really hard. You traded Josh Anderson in the offseason when it didn't look like you could sign him. We know about Panarin and Bobrovsky. So again, with Jones and Marinsky in mind, how important is this offseason as far as changing the perception of some of those things? Particularly, I would say the Dubois forcing.
Yeah, and I think each one of those situations were different from each other. We've been kind of labeled as a destination or city or franchise that players didn't want to stay with, and that's not really accurate. And it kind of aggravates me because there's a lot of things behind the scenes that you really can't talk about. We make plans with who we want to sign and who we want to continue with. And then when the player departs, everybody says that he didn't want to stay, but that's not always accurate. So it's a two-way street. I've said it many times that we would have kept Artemi Panarin at any price. We offered him a contract that's by far the biggest contract in the franchise history ever offered. But he had his mindset of going to New York, and not much you can do about it. We did everything that we possibly could to keep him. But, you know, that was the player that we wanted to keep. But, you know, everybody talks about the five departures or whatever the number was that year. Well, that's not really accurate what happened, but I'm not going to get into any more detail of that. Pierre-Luc Dubois, he did what he did, and we had to make a trade. And Josh Anderson's situation is completely different too, because it was more about the business, and we offered him a long-term contract that we thought was very fair. And I think that with the Canadian taxis, he probably would have made more money with us had he stayed with us. But then you have to make a decision with the player that has arbitration rights and 1 year left before he gets to UFA, whether you're gonna battle that battle and let him walk into free agency, or trade him at the deadline that year, or try to trade him the year before and get more return that way. And that's the route we took. And so every situation with each one of those players was a little bit different and challenging. But we have a lot of players here, and a lot of players that have departed from Columbus. Scott Hartnell being one of them, who always speaks very highly of Columbus and his experience over here. And he was in a few good places in the NHL and played in the NHL for a long time. Over 1,000 games, and he should know. And we have a very strong alumni guys that decided to stay in Columbus after their career. One of my best friends, Freddie Modine, won the cup in Tampa Bay and decided to live in Columbus. Rick Nash probably could live anywhere in the world if he wanted to. And he resides in Columbus. So it's a great place to live, and a great city, and a passionate sports city. When you look at the football games with 105,000 people in the normal times every game, and the passion that the fans in Ohio have for sports and hockey. You look at the atmosphere that we had in the playoff games, and when we had some success, it was incredible. I've never seen anything like it. I get chills just thinking about it. So I mean, it would be an incredible place to win the Stanley Cup in, and a great place to live. So I think the reputation that we've gotten that people don't want to be in Columbus is nonsense, and we're a bit offended by it, because I think that we have a right from the ownership down, we have a great franchise, and we treat people the right way. We have great facility. We make it as good of a place for a pro athlete to be as it could possibly be, and I think we do the things the right way and have high expectations, and we've had a good team. So I don't know what more you want as a pro athlete, but if you want a city of 20 million people, then that's something we can offer. If you want an oceanfront, that's something we can offer. And those are decisions that once you become a unrestricted free agents, you're allowed to make. You have earned that right. So we do the best we can to make it appealing and get the guys that we want as part of our and core of our team to stay. But at the end of the day, it's up to the players. And then if they don't want to stay, we wish them the best of luck, which I did with Artemi Panarin with sadness, because when we got him from Chicago, I thought he could be one of the best players in the league. I think he's proven that he's one of the best players in the league, and right up there with the best of them in my evaluation. And I think he's shown that in New York. He should be in the Hart Trophy consideration last year, this year. You know, I think he's going to be there every year for the foreseeable future. And I'm certainly sad that we couldn't convince him to stay, but he's a good person and he was a great teammate, and I wish him nothing but the best. But you know, we keep building, and a lot of our guys love it in Columbus, and so that's something that we're a little bit offended by, that there seems to be some kind of a reputation that Columbus is not a good place to be.
Yarmo, I can tell you both Pierre and I have spent lots of nights in Columbus, and we like Columbus. Now, I know you don't you don't sign the writers.
Yes, indeed.
But you talk about building, you know, what you are building in Columbus, and one of the important building blocks, of course, is going to be your head coach and whoever that is. I just think it's interesting. You took over as GM in Columbus in February of 13, and the fall of 15, you hired John Tortorella. You've traveled a lot of road together with that team and had lots of ups and a few downs. But can you describe how you expect things to unfold as you and John come to a decision on what's going to happen with the coaching position in Columbus? He's at the end of his deal, and we'll see what happens. But how do you expect that to unfold?
Oh, we'll sit down face-to-face after the season like we do on a daily basis here on everything that's going on around the team. I have a tremendous amount of respect for what he's done for the franchise and for the team and for a lot of individuals in their development. He's a demanding coach. He's as honest as they come. Some players handle it well. Some players don't. But as I say to all the players that kind of struggle with his style of coaching, is that later on you're going to appreciate somebody telling you the truth right to your face rather than telling you something that you want to hear in front of you and something else behind your back. That's never going to happen with Torts. And that's why there are some conflicts every once in a while. And me and him have some heated conversations every once in a while too, but it never gets personal. We get through it and we shake hands and move forward. And I really respect that kind of character that he has. He's a very interesting guy. And, you know, we've had a lot of lengthy conversations about coaching and player evaluation and player development. And sometimes we don't agree and then we agree to disagree and move forward and keep talking about it and keep reflecting on our conversations. And I think that he's made me a better general manager, understanding the coaching side better. And hopefully I've had a little bit of influence and him and understanding the player development side and the projections that we have for players and the roles we expect them to play and how fast you can get there. Those are the kind of topics that we talk about almost daily. And it's been interesting to say the least, but as I said, he's a great coach. He's got all these wins in the league and he's stayed in the league for a long time for a reason. You know, I have a lot of respect for him.
I mean, as you point out, I mean, there have been, you know, whether it was Pierre-Luc Dubois or Patrick Laine after he arrived, certainly most recently, you know, Max Domi out of the lineup after some things happened that John didn't like. Do you guys talk about that, those kinds of decisions, roster decisions on a daily basis, or do you step back from that? Or I'm just curious, again, we've worked together so long that I'm assuming that, you know, that's a, the doors are open both ways, but I'm wondering on those kinds of decisions, what's your relationship like with John on those kinds of things?
Oh, we talk about it heatedly after every one of those and after every game. And we don't always agree on those decisions. But he's adamant about the way he does things. And I've always had the philosophy that you let the coach the way he does. You give him your opinion. He calls that I nudge him, and I try to on some decisions that lead into his roster decisions or other decisions. But then I let him coach because that's his role and he does it well. We've had several conversations about it, you know, like the Patrick Laine at benching, for example. You know, we disagreed on the punishment on the crime. I guess that's the best way I could put it. I mean, I understand where he was coming from and why the decision was made when he was benched, but I disagreed on the punishment on the crime, and that's where I leave it. You know, he's a good coach, and he's set in his ways and values and principles, and I have a lot of the same ones, and I feel strongly about them, and And that's our daily process. We talk about those things. We talk about the decisions and the games and practices and on individuals and the system we play with, the special teams, and all kinds of different things that we deal with on a daily basis.
Almost done here, Yermo, and thanks again for taking this time today. Such a fascinating conversation. We should touch on Liney. One thing that interests me, and I know they're completely different situations, and you're not going to want to comment on what's going on in Winnipeg, but the biggest trade in years in this league, at least in season or at the start of the season, but I think Dubois still trying to find himself in Winnipeg, and I don't think it's gone that great for Patrick with you guys. It's interesting. Now, are there reasons for that, or obviously, what's your sense of the outcome of that deal so far?
Well, I always say when you guys rate the trades, who won and who didn't, and you do that 1 hour after the trade was made. I do that yeah. 5 years after the trade, but that's just me. And I know you guys have to come up with interesting topics, and I respect that. But it takes time. We have so many old NHL players in our staff, and we've talked at length about the experience of getting traded and how it might take quite a long time before you get used to the new environment, the teammates find chemistry, all those things. So good players find a way, some find it quicker, some take a little bit more time and how they fit and how comfortable they feel and how their role evolves and all those things. So it always takes time, and we're going to be patient with the guys that we got. And it's work in progress there. I think, Jack Roslovic has shown a lot of promise with us too. I think he's got by far the most points out of those three after the trade was made, and right. Nobody talks about him. But he's definitely worked.
It wasn't called the Jack Roslovic trade at the time.
No. But I mean, he's work in progress on the other side of the puck. He's learning to play center for the first time full time in the NHL, and the defensive side has been a challenge. The face-off circle has been a challenge for him, but those are the things a young player can learn if he has the drive and desire to do that. And he expressed strong desire to play center in the league to us, and I think that was part of it why he wanted out of Winnipeg, that he wasn't given the opportunity to do that, but you also have to earn that opportunity. So it's been an interesting process with him too, but he's only 22 years old and it's got a long way to go as a player, but there's a lot of potential there too. So we look forward to growing with players like that. But as I said, you always have to earn your role. You always have to earn your ice time, and that comes through hard work and desire to get better every day. And that to me is always the biggest thing with the young players, whether you're looking at the draft or the trade that you just made for a young player, is that does he have that character and desire to become a better player every single day? Because if you're wasting days, you're wasting an opportunity to get better, and you'll never get that day back. And that's a strong message that we always give to our young players, that don't waste any days, because you can never go back and recapture that opportunity. It's gone. And that's why the process that we have here with John Tortorella has been so valuable, because when you're with him and when you're practicing with him, he's not going to allow you to waste any days or he's going to throw you off the ice. To go think about it in the locker room, and all the good coaches have that. They're not going to let the team waste any days of development in that process to get better.
Yeah. Yermo, I think that's a process we could all learn from, is not to waste any days. That is for sure. But it's always great to catch up with you, and it's a fascinating time ahead for you and the Blue Jackets. But thanks for spending some time and walking us through all this kind of stuff. So thank you, and really the best of luck to you as you move forward.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Quitos.
Hola, Huba.
Pierre, I'm always enthused when I talk to Yarmo, because he's so direct and so honest. And I give him all kinds of credit because, you know, to come and chat, and I was just like, it's amazing, frankly, to look at the standings now, technically in eighth place in the Central Division. And really, like, I could not have seen this coming. I really like this team. I didn't know if they were going to be a playoff team, but man, this has been. A very difficult season and a huge step back for this team. But I just love his attitude, and it's going to be fascinating to see what happens. Three first round picks, all those kinds of things. What's your gut tell you about what's going on in Columbus?
Well, first of all, I mean, he really did. I don't know if you agree or not, but who had a better trade deadline than him? Maybe I just didn't think first round picks would be flying around like they did, but I can't believe he got that return. And listen, I really, in particular, value Nick Foligno, but still, I did not think he would get it first. Did you? I mean, I didn't.
No, I didn't think any rental player. I thought if first went, it would be younger player with term. I'm with you. I did not think it was going to happen, let alone that it would happen twice for the same team.
Yeah, so that part was tremendous. But it's a huge offseason. And again, credit to Keiko Lennon for really answering it head on. He's got to extend Jones, one of the best defensemen in the world. He's got to extend Marinsky, very talented defenseman. Got to figure out lining. And I don't want to read between the lines too much because it's unfair to do that. But when I asked him about Lange, he didn't really talk about him. So I think there's clearly some disappointment about how Lange has played so far. But more importantly, he's up. He's RFA. And so yeah. I'm so curious how that contract negotiation goes. Partnered with, I know, some front offices that are planning to kick tires on that situation. So I don't know. So that one's interesting. But, you know, he's got cap room. I think what he was hinting at with that, there are teams that are going to be really in trouble with the flat cap. And we've seen the premium already paid, right, with what it costs to get out of that jam. So I think there's some opportunities. Right.
Washington.
There. Yeah, there's some opportunities there for Columbus. So that'll be interesting. And we know that he's not, Yarmo Kekalainen is not scared to make some pretty big moves. And so I think he's going to be in the middle of a lot of things this offseason.
Yeah. Well, and he's got, we didn't even talk about it, but he's got two goaltenders who are, I think, you make the case that both Elvis Merzlikins and Jonas Korpisalo are starting NHL goaltenders. They both have a year left on their respective deals. They have zero, they don't have any trade protection. So he's, again, that's, whether it's a team like Edmonton or whatever happens, I mean, there's going to be a lot going on. But before we go to a break, to me, all of this comes back to, or so much of this comes back to, what happens with Jordan Tortorella. And
right.
I just love how Yarmo was so candid about, like, they obviously have not, and I don't think it's important, but they obviously have not always been in lockstep on exactly what's happening with the roster, how it's deployed. This whole Max Domi thing is a real, it has not worked out, right? Just has not worked out. Mm-hmm. Now, does it change if someone else is coaching that team? I don't know. But again, what's your gut tell you?
I've been on this year. I think Aaron Portzline, our terrific esteemed Blue Jackets beat writer, has as well. Keep in mind that with the John Tortorella situation, it's not your prototypical situation where the coach, I think, is begging and hoping he's going to get extended. I think that my sense of the situation is that John Tortorella himself has to decide what he wants,
right,
which is interesting. Exactly. It's a little different than your normal situation, right, with a coach?
Right.
And so it's a two-way street there. One, Kekalainen has to decide about the coach, and I think the coach has to decide about what he wants. So that in itself is, makes it quite compelling in terms of what's going to happen there.
Yeah. Well, yes, I'm that team is, you know, has provided no end of storylines and narratives during this crazy season, that's for sure. And it won't stop between now and the end of the draft. And as we look ahead to training camp next year, it's going to be fascinating. So anyway, good stuff by you.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
All right, as promised, we're going to go come back with some questions and wrap things up. Just curious, Pierre, do you think Carter Hart's a good bet to go to Worlds for Team Canada? Just I want to get this on the record.
He's a good bet to be asked. Hopefully he says yes, but yes. Good work, good work.
All right, you see, I thought I rebounded well with the Yarmo interview. I'm okay. You know, it's like, hey, you get a bad shift every once in a while, right? Thank God Torts is not coaching us, or I'd have been benched. I wouldn't be even around for the final segment. So. All right, and this is what we're going to come back to, a question from Matthew Jex, MJex19. Which underrated trade will be this year's sneaky good acquisition a la Michael Kempney? I gave you a hint, so you can't blow this up.
All right, I'll give you a couple. And yes, I do agree that I do like, you know,
Yanni Hakanpää.
Yeah, I'm going to get to that last. I'm going to give you a weird one because I don't even know if we're for sure going to see him. But how about Riley Nash by the Leafs? Because a lot of people just viewed that as an LTIR deal, kind of a little wrinkle that the Leafs did, right? 2 days before the deadline to give themselves more room. And of course, that was a byproduct. But Riley Nash is a really good fourth line player. I've grown to admire through some of the playoff series I've seen Columbus play. And if and when he gets healthy, I think that's a nice little add on for the Leafs in the bottom six. And so there's an example, I believe, you know, of what could be end up being a significant pickup later in the playoffs. But yeah, I think Hakanpää is an interesting pickup by Carolina. They wanted some physicality. They wanted a right-handed shot. After the trade was made, I had a front office guy from a rival team immediately say, "Ooh, that's going to be a good fit for Carolina." So that's a great example there. Because let's be honest, that's not a. If that deal created any headlines on deadline day, it was more because a first-round pick and Hayden Fleury got dealt. Right? More from that side.
And the guy I'm so curious about, and he's already made an impact, you and I had talked about him. I remember talking to Eric DeHatrick about it, but Sam Bennett going to Florida from Calgary, you know, obviously just wasn't really a fit for him in Calgary. High pick, and boy, just, you know, he's got 3 goals, 2 assists in 3 games for Florida. And as you pointed out earlier, what a great series that Panther Lightning first ever all Florida playoff series. It would be titanic. Honestly, it would be so much fun. And I think Sam Bennett's going to be, he's a guy who can elevate come playoff time too. So good pick up there. How about this? How about a couple from Steve Van Eyck? Yes, does Minnesota have the best goalie duo in Kokkonen and Talbot? interesting. I think there are some others out there, but what do you think?
Well, I think pretty hard to beat Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Leonard. As a goalie duo, that would be my one. I think when they're healthy, Carey Price and Jake Allen are hard to beat. All they need now is some goal support from their teammates. So those would be my top two pairing. But yeah, I think the point of the question is what a story. And that is absolutely right. And what a story Minnesota is. They keep winning games and you keep handing. I think that I couldn't have been more direct last week when we talked about this, but we keep handing Vegas and Colorado second round entries, right? But boy, the Wild have played a good team game as anyone in that division this year. It might lead to your next question, by the way, about the Jack Adams.
All right. Also, I'm going back to it. See, you've taken over the Ask the Dork segment here. From Maureen, how about, she's asked about a number of different trophies, but I am curious about Coach of the Year and where how you see that shaking down.
So I do think Dean Evason deserves to be in the conversation. So let me preface this by saying that I'm going based on how the voters usually vote. You and I don't vote on this one. This is a broadcaster's award to Jack Adams. That's not right. But it really comes down usually the criteria is the teams that surprise us the most. So I think based on that, when you look at what people thought of Minnesota before the year, and I'm not saying people thought they'd be lousy, but I think people view them as a bubble team, right? And they've certainly exceeded that. But if you really ask me, the guy that there's a couple more names I want to get to, Paul Maurice in Winnipeg, the Jets were not a favorite pick. It's funny now, everyone's, I think, trying to fudge that and say, oh, yeah, we knew the Jets would be good. I'm telling you, I asked a lot of people before the season about the All-Canadian division. The Jets were rarely picked in the top four. So I think Paul Maurice's work has been terrific this year. But the guy that I think should win is Joel Quenneville. And again, you go to the criteria and how this award is felt out. No one saw this from the Florida Panthers. Nobody. And it's real. It's sustainable. It continues to happen. I'd be surprised if you didn't know the Jack Adams.
All right. I'm going to throw in Rod Brind'Amour there. I just continues to be, for my money,
well,
that
sure,
place.
But here's the thing. Brind'Amour, Pete DeBoer, Jared Bednar. No, but I mean, obviously yeah, their teams are great, but I mean, they were supposed to be great, I guess. Which is unfortunate. It shouldn't be that way.
I know what you're saying.
But I think that's what's going to hurt them.
Okay. And I want to give the final question. And I'm going to, my friend Al Lalonde sends a question every week. Mostly it's about personal grooming and whether you and I take yoga classes together and stuff like that. But his question this week, I'm just curious as we close out, and it's interesting given our conversation with Jarmo, is that basically, given the challenge for scouting for the 21 draft, right? With the OHL just canceled, it's basically shut down for the rest of the season. It's just it's all over the place. Do you think that there will be teams who draft high, and whether that's Columbus or Detroit or Ottawa, who have had have a collection of high picks, maybe because of the uncertainty, they might be willing to trade those picks for a more known commodity, so younger players with term or players that are NHL ready on other organizations. Does that make sense? And I think it's an interesting question.
So I think
given how uncertain.
Yeah, I think that's what Jarmo hinted at. If you listen to his answer on now, the fact that he's got three first round picks and this and that, I think he said it'd be whether we decide to use them or in what capacity we use those. Essentially, I think back at our interview today. So yeah, that could be interesting because the Jackets aren't entering a rebuild. They're trying to flip this around quickly with the assets they have. And the assets they have that are most noteworthy are three first-round picks in this draft and momentary cap space for this offseason.
Yep.
Those are two powerful weapons entering what should be a crazy year around the Seattle expansion draft.
Good job by you. All right. And good job by Al. Well, what else we got going on in the podcast world? Former NHLer, Kevin Weeks, such a great guy. The lead studio analyst. At NHL Network is Craig Custance's guest this week on the Full 60. As a guy who sort of dipped his toe into various management openings around the NHL, I think that's probably going to happen at some point for him. And Alex Tongay, assistant coach with the Iowa Wild. I don't know if I knew that. Joins Mike Russo on Straight from the Source this week. At The Athletic, interesting guy, Alex Tongue, a great career for him. And you should check out our comments section for each podcast episode at The Athletic app, and rate and subscribe to The Athletic Hockey Show on Apple. If you aren't already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/hockeyshow and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. My friend, I apologize, I was a little bit off. You know, I had a slow start to this, slow start to the podcast day, but thank you for picking me up.
It's okay. It's the dog days of the season. I know you'll have your A game come the playoffs.